Is it really time to reconsider polygamy? That's what Mark Goldfeder says on CNN. And we're going to be talking about that today on Law and Gospel on this Wednesday, February the 12th, in the year of our Lord, 2014. I'm Tom Baker, your host. And if you want to talk about this subject, don't hesitate to do so. Our number's here in the St. Louis area, 821-0850. Toll free, 1-800-730-2727. Now, I'm not really sure that people understand the ruling that occurred in Utah recently about polygamy. A lot of newspapers say that it was authorized. It was declared unconstitutional, according to a judge, that a man cannot be living with more than one wife. In fact, it all comes about because of the TLC reality series, Sister Wives. Cody Brown, a man, poses with his wives, Robin, Christine, Mary, and Janelle. And what they're trying to do is overturn the laws in Utah that indicated that he could not be married to all four women. Well, what the judge did, and this is really important, even though the state of Utah bans multiple marriages, it also bars a married person from cohabitating, that is, living together with another person. What the judge did is he overthrew the law prohibiting a married person from living with more than one woman. He did not overthrow the law against multiple marriages. In fact, we need to understand a little bit about the word polygamy. The word polygamy simply means multiple marriages. But if you're talking about a man with more than one wife, then the correct term is polygyny, P-O-L-Y-G-Y-N-Y, meaning having more than one wife. And this is different from polyandry, P-O-L-Y-A-N-D-R-Y, where women have more than one husband. A lot of people think that the Islamic faith introduced polygamy, but actually it was going on for centuries prior to Islam coming on the scene. Now, in Arabia, polyandry and polygyny were very common. And there were many reasons for this. Because there were a number of wars, many soldiers, males, were killed. And therefore, there was a surplus of women. So, one man, therefore, would have more than one woman in his household in order to have their property and wealth in the family, as well as exerting control over other tribes by having children with their women. Islam allowed the practice, but with strict responsibilities placed on the husband. In the Quran, it is stated, if you cannot deal justly with the orphans, marry women of your choice, two or three or four, but if you fear that you shall not be able to deal justly with them, then only one. This actually was written after the War of Uhud, U-H-U-D. Many Muslims were killed, leaving many widows and orphans. And it is believed that this verse was revealed to provide women and children with the security of a husband, family, and respect in the society. Now, most Muslim men have monogamous relationships, but about 10 to 15% of Muslim men are believed to have polygamous relationships, and they're mainly concentrated in the Middle Eastern and African states. Now, it is true that in the Bible, Moses, Jacob, David, and Solomon had more than one wife. But it is also clear that there were troubles with that. And so in our day, we do not condone polygamous relationships. First of all 50 states of the United States of America prohibit being married more than one woman. But they do not prohibit, especially since this judge has overruled this, they do not prohibit living with more than one person. of the opposite sex. And that's why that TLC reality series, Sister Wives, they went to court to fight this, and they won the court ruling that struck down Utah's law, not banning polygamous marriages, but banning the idea of living together with more than one person of the opposite sex. Now, what has this got to do with theology? It has a lot to do with theology because we already have homosexual marriages going on in various parts of the country. And a homosexual marriage is not tolerated anywhere in the Bible. In fact, you can't find one place where God permits a homosexual marriage. Now, there are those who say, well, they didn't have the kind of homosexuality that we have today between two loving couples or two loving persons. Well, unfortunately, if you go back to Rome and take a look at that, there were homosexual relationships that appeared outwardly to be quite loving. And yet the Bible is very clear that God considers that to be an abomination. We spoke about yesterday one of the Bible verses we were using in regard to another subject that we were talking about, that slavery, that God forbids people who kidnap individuals in order to make them slaves. That's right in the Bible. But in that same verse, he also prohibits homosexuality. There's a real difference, from my point of view, between churches who stand against immorality, say in regard to abortion, and in regard to, say, homosexuality. And what's the difference? The difference is, I don't know of any congregation or anybody who is opposed to abortion that lost their job or lost their standing with the government. But when it comes to homosexuality, people are being fired. They are being sued. How so? Well, two incidents that come to mind is a florist that refused to do flowers for a homosexual wedding, and someone who makes cakes refused to do a wedding cake for a homosexual wedding, and they were sued and they lost. You know, it's kind of interesting, and I'm not a legal beagle, but I was under the impression that if you have a private business, you don't have to serve what people want. You serve what you want. For example, can you imagine going to a Jewish restaurant and asking for pork? And they say, I'm sorry, we don't serve pork. And you say, okay, I'm going to sue you. And you take them to court and you win. Now, this would not be proper, because many Jews will not eat pork as part of the ceremonial laws. We may disagree with them on that point of view, but they have the right not to eat pork or not to serve pork. Similarly, if you're in a private business, you should have the right to serve who and what you want. Now, some people are saying, well, what do you mean by that? You mean you can deny serving a person because of his skin color? No. I'm not speaking about race. I'm talking about items, products that you sell. For example, I have a publishing house, Terrellian Productions, and a number of you have bought items from it. If you want to see what we have, you can go to lawgospel.com. That's our website, lawgospel.com. And when you go to our website, you will see a multitude of products. At my store in Overland, Missouri, I offered to publish books for people. And in fact, I was just on the phone with someone who's doing a novel on the Civil War. There's nothing particularly religious about it. We will not probably put that up on our website because it's not religious, but we will probably publish it for the person. We don't have any problem with that. There's nothing immoral about the book and so forth. But if somebody walked into my store and said, here, I'd like you to publish this book of pornography, I would refuse to do so. Now, do I have the right to do that? I absolutely think I do. Also by the laws of the land. Nobody can force me to publish something with which I disagree, especially on a biblical level. So we're coming into a very interesting situation, and there are some rulings the Supreme Court is going to be making, particularly in light of the health care laws, where people are being forced to provide abortion techniques for their workers. Well, that's just wrong. If you know of a nurse who's pro-life, you know that in the United States of America right now, even if she works at a hospital that do abortions, she can refuse to do that and nothing can happen to her. Well, that ought to be true about all kinds of things. I know some pastors are kind of worried about when the first two homosexuals come to your church and they want you to marry them. And of course, you would refuse to do so if you're a Christian pastor, because that's contrary to the will of God. But what if they take you to court and sue? I don't think that's going to happen in the United States. Well, they may take you to court to sue, but I'd be really surprised if they won, because we pastors have declined to do marriages for all kinds of reasons. Some of them are legal. For example, if somebody came into my office and he's 22 years old and he wants to marry a 12-year-old, no, that's not legal. But there are some times when pastors refuse to marry because of the vows that a person refuses to say. I remember one particular instance where one of my members was going to marry a Baptist. And when he came in, he said, "Would you marry us?" I said, "If you can follow the guidelines and the promises that are in the marriage ceremony, I would." He said, "Well, what do you mean by that?" "Well, remember that statement where you promised to follow the ordinance of Christ?" He said, "Yes, I will do that." I said, "Well, when you do that in a Lutheran church, it means you will baptize your children." And he looked at me and said, "No, there's no way I'm going to baptize my children." And the wife, who was a member of my congregation, looked at him and said, "What did you say?" She was totally unaware of how strong he was in his Baptist feelings, and therefore he was not going to baptize children, which, of course, is something that she just assumed was going to happen. I won't tell you the end of that, but be that as it may, there was some serious conversation going on between those two. The fact of the matter is that pastors have a right to decline a marriage under any circumstance. Now, I do know some pastors who will marry anybody, and they do so on the grounds that it gives you the opportunity to perhaps share with them the message of Jesus Christ. I know one pastor, he had a congregation, and he would marry anybody, but he would not marry everybody in the sanctuary. If you were not Christian or following the vows, there was a garden kind of area outside the church, and that's where he would marry. And he wouldn't use the word God or anything in it, but he would just do the marriage ceremony. He made quite a bit of money doing that because he was well known in the town. But I don't think that's appropriate from my point of view, because a pastor is just more than a civil servant. You know, you have to be a civil servant of the government in order to conduct a marriage. I remember when I was in Michigan, for example, you had to be a pastor in Michigan in order to do the marriage. Whereas in Missouri, as long as you're a pastor anywhere in the United States of America and on the roster of your denomination, that is the official listing of who is an ordained pastor and who is not, then you could go ahead and do a marriage. Now, maybe you're not agreeing with me on some things or you have some questions. Don't hesitate to call me. I'll open up the lines right now. In St. Louis, the number is 821-0850. And toll free, it's 1-800-730-2727. That's 1-800-730-2727. What we're talking about here is, although we started with polygamy, we got into the whole subject as to whether or not the government is going to be able to force congregations to do things that are contrary to their beliefs. The health law seems like that's the direction we're going, where congregations, if they have a health plan, must include the possibility of having an abortion and being paid for in that health plan, which is totally contrary to the will of God. So it's going to be very interesting where the Supreme Court comes down on this issue, because they're going to be doing some items pretty soon here. As to polygamy, one of the problems we are finding, even among Lutherans, people living together outside of marriage. And this also is happening with elderly people, because I guess there's some law that if you get married after a certain age, then only one of the social securities is available to the couple. And in order not to lose money, then people are refusing to be married, but they still continue to live together. I know that's in a catch-22 situation, but according to the will of God, that still is a sin. And congregations need to be aware of that fact. Now, different pastors have different policies. It's not unusual in these days that a couple will come to be married and they're already living together. My policy was I would not marry them until they lived separately. I remember it wasn't really a member of my congregation, but I was what they call an interim pastor for a congregation that didn't have a pastor. They were in the process of calling a pastor. And so I was doing counseling or comforting people in those situations. And a couple came to me and they wanted to get married and they were living together, a young couple. And I said that was contrary to the will of God and the marriage would not take place if that continued. And the girl looked at me and she said, well, what would we have to do? And I said, all you would have to do is move back and live with your mom and dad until the marriage takes place, and then you can live together. And she says, is that all? And I said, well, obviously you want to be meeting with one another and living together then during that time. She said, well, I'd have no problem with that. And they became convinced on the basis of God's holy word that such a living relationship was contrary to the will of God. And so when you give them an out, a lot of times as they are filled with the Holy Spirit, they will recognize that and they will take that out, and we were able to marry them after that. Maybe you know of another policy, or maybe you have a question, or maybe there's somebody in your family that you're wondering, how are you going to deal with this situation? Numbers here, St. Louis, 821-0850, or toll-free, 1-800-730-2727. On tomorrow's Law and Gospel, we're going to be talking somewhat on a similar basis. I don't want to get into it right now, but the Methodist Church is in real crisis over gay marriage. We have a number of Methodist pastors who are conducting gay marriages, but the church law in the Methodist Church is opposed to that. So with our good friend, Pastor Wes Reimnitz, we're going to be examining that and seeing if any repercussions are going to be coming over to your particular denomination. Right now, the vast majority of Christians belong to churches that have a number of consistent teachings. Number one, baptizing of infants. The majority of Christians belong to churches that baptize infants. Also against abortion. Also against homosexuality and homosexual unions. That's a vast majority of Christians. But that doesn't mean that all of the pastors or priests in those denominations practice that. Unfortunately, there are false priests, false pastors. And that's why when you go to a church, let's say you move into an area, first of all, I would definitely advise going to a Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, because there you have the proper teaching. and you would want to visit that church to see if you're comfortable with kind of preaching that's going on, with the pastor, his views on certain items you'll want to know, in order that, in case you have children, they will be brought up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. It's really an important thing to do when you're dealing with people. Okay, phone numbers are 8210850 or 1-800-730-2727. Let's go talk with James. Hi, James.
Hello, Pastor. I'd like for you to give me a law and gospel analysis of Ezra 10, verses 9, 10, and 15. And I'd like to know if you think that these spiritual leaders or Levites are acting within their rights, and if they would be considered courageous heroes or just troublemaking heretics worthy of excommunication for what they're doing.
Ezra, is that a book in the Bible?
You know, you told me that on some occasions.
Yes. Don't you ever read the New Testament, James? The New Testament is really pretty good, you know. There's a lot of great things in there, and every time you say something, Ezra, are you doing some kind of study on the Old Testament?
Well, I have done studies on the Old Testament, but I was listening to your talk today, and it just made me think of maybe there's some insight I can glean from the Ezra 10, verses 9 and 10 and 15.
We'll be glad to do that. Are you going to stay on the line, or...?
No, I'm going to go back and listen.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All righty. So what we're talking about here is Ezra, and that definitely is in the Old Testament. One thing you just got to remember about the Old Testament is a lot of times you have a distinction between ceremonial laws, moral laws, and then, of course, civil laws. And we are no longer bound either to the ceremonial laws or to the civil laws of the Old Testament. So sometimes when you take a look at that, people get confused. In light of our conversation, for example, what we're talking about here in regard to homosexuality, we don't consider that the, the laws against homosexuality are civil or ceremonial laws. We consider them to be the laws of what? God's morality. So that's why we find them also in the New Testament. And therefore, from that point of view, we're not particularly concerned about getting mixed up with these various laws. It's very clear that all of them are according to God's will, and when they're according to God's will, then we need to follow them. All right, Ezra 10, let me just read 9, 10, and 15. Then all the men of Judah and Benjamin assembled at Jerusalem within the 3 days. It was the ninth month on the 20th day of the month, and all the people sat in the open square before the house of God, trembling because of this matter and because of the heavy rain. And Ezra the priest stood up and said to him, "You have broken faith and married foreign women, and so increased the guilt of Israel." And now I'm going to read 11 and 12 because this is important. "Now then, make confession to the Lord, the God of your fathers, and do his will. Separate yourselves from the peoples of the land and from the foreign wives." Then all the assembly answered with a loud voice, "It is so, we must do as you have said. But the people are many, and it is a time of heavy rain. We cannot stand in the open. Nor is this a task for one day or for two, for we have greatly transgressed in this matter. Let our officials stand for the whole assembly. Let all in our cities who have taken foreign wives come at appointed times, and with them the elders and judges of every city, until the fierce wrath of our God over this matter is turned away from us." And now verse 15. "Only Jonathan, the son of Ashiel, and Yahaziah, the son of Tikvah, opposed this, and Mishulam and Shabbatai, the Levite, supported them." Okay. What we have here is the rule by God that forbids intermarriage with unbelievers. And a lot of times that marriage took place, like if you look at Solomon, because he wanted to protect himself, and he would therefore marry the daughters of his enemies, and in that way thought he was fine. This is not something that God forbids in our day, because this is more of a civil law at the time of Moses. But it certainly is a law that one needs to be careful of. When you marry a woman who is not a Christian, you could be running into some problems. Even though such a marriage is still legal in the sight of God, it is not something where you're going to have a, shall we say, calm and comforting life. I'm Tom Baker. Thanks for listening. As I said, tomorrow with Reverend Wes Reimnitz, we'll be talking. God bless.
Listen to Law and Gospel on Worldwide KFUO. You can write Pastor Baker at KFUO, 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. Or email lawgospel@lawgospel.com. We are the messenger of good news, KFUO.